Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. We're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody, and apologies to the listener in advance for some construction-related sounds you may be hearing in the background. Some contractors at the property today, even though I told them that 4 o'clock is quitting time, it sounds like they've forgotten about that for now. So,
well, you always have to remind them.
Indeed.
You always have to remind them, and... you know, so it is what it is. And what a day it was today. You know, we had another big recovery from the 900-point drop yesterday, the 725 to the finish of yesterday. And the markets came back again. So there was a little bit of pressure on gold today with the stronger dollar. So we're looking at gold, $2 to the downside, 1,811. Silver was down 21 cents at 2,504. Platinum was down $7 at $1,071, and palladium was up 45 at $2,721. The USDX today was up 0.13 at 92.97. Crude oil was up 90 cents today at $67.32. So Wall Street had a heck of a day. The Dow was up 550 points, 34,512. Was up 1.62%. The S&P was up 1.5%, up 64 points at 4,323. The NASDAQ was up 1.5%, 223 points to the upside, 14,498. And, of course, there was rebounds all across Europe after those big down, although they didn't recover as much as what ours did. Excuse me. So... they did recover, though. However, Asia did not. They continue on the downside across the Asian markets. 10-year yield, well, it did pop up out of the teens, 1.21% for the 10-year yield. And, you know, I mean, it's really no big surprise. I expected that kind of a day after yesterday's day because there really wasn't anything. And I'm not quite sure really what is directing the markets to, you know, hey, the markets are used to going up, so you have a big but down day. I don't think we've experienced anything to continue to put, although it should, don't get me wrong. I mean, by all means, the Dow should be down 15,000 points, okay? With reality, with everything in this economy, things should be a lot worse than what they show on these paper markets, but we know how they manipulate them and so forth. But I didn't really see anything. The biggest thing was yesterday's 10-year yield. That was interesting.
And oil.
Yeah, oil. So they made a deal, you know, and you know they do that all the time. I mean, they run it up, and you know, so even that wasn't too much of a big surprise. That's just what they do. But the 10-year was, you know, kind of interesting yesterday, and we'll have to see where it goes. What did the 2-year do, Dave?
What did it do? The 2-year, I know the 3-month was unchanged. The 2-year down 0.01 of a point. So roughly the same as the 5-year, which was down 0.01 of a point. Hmm. 0.68 and 0.20, respectively, the 5 and 2-year.
So has the 2-year been lower than 0.20?
Oh, well, I don't follow that a whole lot. I follow the two,
I don't either. I was just curious, with the big drop at the 10, what did they do?
Well, let's take a quick look.
I should have looked yesterday, but...
Yeah, when the two... Well, Yeah, prior, gosh. Is this right? Yeah, boy. Yeah, prior to mid-June, it was below 2.2 for over a year. So it was real suppressed. It looks like an average may have been almost 1.5, 1.6. Mm. Yeah, so it's really just spiked since mid-June.
Oh, okay. So I really didn't see any. We're going to talk about a lot of the news today, but of course, the big news, I think we're going to talk about it, was Bezos, or you're going to. Bezos, fondly called Bozo. No, Bezos. You know, it's just like, you got to be kidding when that's the biggest news that they can talk about.
I like to refer to him as the richest man in the world.
You know what? The thing of it is, he is the richest man in the world. But the thing of it is, I really don't care. I really don't care what they do. I don't want to know what they do. I'm not interested in knowing what they do. Yeah, you know, and it, but yet they continue to, you know, make them the story of the day. And it's like, you know, not when they get all of our stimulant. Anyway, that's a story that we've talked about quite a bit here.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, there's some evidence out there that home builders might be pulling back. There's a couple of signs in the market for newly built homes that point to maybe a slowdown for the nation's home builders. There was some information or some data released this morning. Single-family housing starts, they continue to rise in June, but many of those homes are already sold. But the building permits, now this is an indicator of future construction, that fell more than expected last month, since the lowest point since August, and we're about 100,000 units below the six-month average. Now, this all came out according to the Census Bureau. Now, the single-family market in particularly needs more new homes, especially on the lower end. And that's where your first-time home buyers need some price relief and maybe even some more supply choices. So elsewhere in the market, mortgage applications to purchase a newly built home dropped nearly 24% in June from a year ago. And this is a third consecutive month of decline. Now, this was all according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. There's an economist by the name of Joel Kahn. He said that home builders are encountering stronger headwinds of late as severe price increases for key building materials, rising regulatory costs, labor shortages impact their ability to raise production. Well, it is a good thing, though, that they whacked that 10-year yield. Mm-hmm. Offset some of these higher prices just to keep those people out there buying those homes. The average loan amount also hit another record. I mean, I can't believe this, Dave. The average loan amount, almost $400,000.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. But listen to this nuance. Kahn added this. As more potential buyers in the lower price tiers are being priced out of the market, that's exerting further upward pressure on average loan balances. So that explains that. I would guess it's got to be closer to the lower threes. Otherwise, I seem to recall that, in fact, earlier this year, we talked about an average mortgage loan being in like the three, in the teens, 315, close to 320 perhaps. But anyway, these latest developments come after, you know, the hottest year for housing demand and home construction in more than a decade last year. Home builder sentiment, which is still high, has dropped this month, with builders citing these continued pressures on construction costs. Again, we've been saying lumber prices, which shot up last year and hit a high just a few months ago, have fallen back dramatically in the last couple of weeks. But so far, that savings hasn't trickled down to consumers or builders. Prices for other materials are also rising. Now, Bob Dietz, who's chief economist at the National Association of Home Builders, talked about the recent weakening of single-family and multifamily building permits being due to higher material costs, again, pushing new homes, the price higher, and also causing a big challenge for a housing market that, again, as Melody mentioned, needs additional inventory. So the median price of a newly built home in May was up 18% year over year. The price for existing homes also up double digits from a year ago. So I don't know if that says we're still in that crazy buyer's market or seller. What were we in? We were in a seller's market just a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, mortgage rates have dropped significantly in the last few weeks, but still not enough to make up for those huge price gains.
Although it's a good selling tool, though.
Indeed.
You get people in a frenzy, and, you know, they'll do it just to get that low rate. But, you know, when we're talking about supplies and demand, we know that we reported on the prices of used cars and trucks were up 45% over the past year. And we learned that the used car supply shortage now is beginning to maybe loosen up. With those prices exploding in the past year, boosting inflation substantially, disruption in the production of new cars were holding back the supply of pre-owned cars. So as of mid-July, there were 44 days of supply in the used car market. And this is all according to Manheim Auto Auction. This means at the current rate of used car sales, it would take 44 days to clear the inventory. This is up from 36 days a month ago. And a low of 30 days in mid-April. 44 days in supply is the normal pre-pandemic used vehicle inventory level. You know, I was up in Manheim this weekend, and I was driving through the town, and as you go through Manheim, and then you go into Lancaster, it's just like all car. It's nothing but car lots for miles, a couple miles anyway. And I was looking at the lots, and you could really see the limited supply of vehicles that they had on the lots. And I'm talking both new and used. So it was, you know, it caught my attention. So it was kind of interesting because I knew that the Manheim auction is the largest auto auction in the country.
Yeah,
and you
that's
think
interesting.
Yeah, so you think if those places would have vehicles, since you had the largest auction there, but you could see the limited supply of vehicles.
I drove that route back in the springtime, Melody, and for the first time that I can ever remember, that auto auction lot was no more than half full. It was almost like a double take. Just passing by, and all of a sudden you know that your brain says something's different about this stretch, and that was it. But you know, Manheim explains that this shift is being driven by, you know, a modest decline in used car sales volume, but also an improvement in used car supply. Now, even though new car sales cooled off last month, they're still reported as being strong. And buyers continue to take advantage of trade-in offers, which have brought many more used cars to the market. Manheim also reported that wholesale used vehicle prices actually declined 1.7% during the first half of this month. But despite the favorable trends in supply and the very recent decline in these wholesale prices, retail prices still remain high. But then retail used car prices do lag the wholesale prices by about a month. So maybe next month we'll see that starting to catch up.
Well, you know, I don't even know if I want to talk about this next topic. I mean, it just, and I think what makes this interesting is the fact of just how bizarre
crazy
the data is being the type of data that's being produced by government and their affiliates to guide us through this so-called economy with the downturn that we've experienced. I mean, come on. You shut the world global economies down, and what do you expect? We're not this economy we're in, this isn't new growth. It's just coming back online. You know, it's like your computer breaks and you're off the, you know, you get it fixed, but that doesn't mean you've added four more computers. No, you're just fixing the one you have.
I got a thousand emails to catch up on. Let's just, from when we were closed down, shut down for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Plus you have about 500 new ones.
Yeah. I mean, so we've talked about being in a recession February of last year. Actually, it started a little bit before everything was shut down here, but it was beginning to perhaps feel some of the overseas impacts from the pandemic with the government world economy shut down. I think Europe shut down before us. So now the agency who predicts whether we're in a recession or not, the National Bureau of Economic Research, they said it ended. They said that recession that they said we entered in February of 2020 actually ended in April of 2020. Yeah. And what's interesting, what? It took them this long to figure it out? A year? I mean, this is totally crazy. I mean, we still have a long way to go, and unemployment is elevated far above the pre-pandemic levels. But yet you're going to have all these economists grab onto this article and say, well, most of them didn't even admit we were in the recession after they, so I'm not sure if they, maybe they will and maybe they won't pay attention to this. But Dave, are these people nuts or what? Don't they have anything better? Do these people just have too much time on their hands or what?
Well, you know, if you look at the list of the members of this committee on the NBER, I mean, it's not a who's who, but I'll tell you what, the places they studied or work at and run their computer models and teach their college students, I mean, that's some impressive name dropping going on.
Yeah, well.
What? Just
they need to go to our school.
Can't judge a book by its cover, Melody.
You bet. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And before we continue, I think we're done with that. Was there any other? There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on, and I guess you'll touch on it after the second break. Student loan borrowers. I'm just going to touch on this briefly. It's like, excuse me, when do you get to decide when you're ready to resume your monthly payments for your loans? More than two-thirds of federal student loan borrowers say, we're not ready to resume our monthly payments. Now, this was a survey conducted for the Pew Charitable Trust, which comes as the U.S. Department of Education's payment pause and interest waiver for borrowers is set to expire at the end of September. Hey, does anybody know that businesses cannot find job people to work? So why aren't these kids going out there to work so that they can resume their monthly payments, or are they waiting to see if their loan debt doesn't get wiped off the books? Which is it?
Oh, that's a very good point.
Yes. So I'm not in favor of that. It's an obligation. You chose to make those decisions. And no, you don't get a free ride. It's called life.
That bugs me too, Melody. If I may just interject while I think of it, a friend of mine a couple of months ago now had mentioned that his daughter had decided to join the forbearance program. I'm not going to share her particular situation, but it does bug me. I think about people like my own daughter, and I guess I'm tooting her horn. I mean, to the extent she works part-time, she has two young children at home, trying to raise a young family, and she has continued making her student loan payments. Now, perhaps they're not as large as others. I mean, hers is below the average, the monthly average of $315 or whatever. Now they say in this particular article it's $400, but still she's continued them each and every month. And when I see something like this, that they're some 60% or whatever not ready, or more than that, it's like, boy, that it's really insulting to the good faith ones who wanted to keep pushing forward even when they easily could have taken advantage of a forbearance program. I'm sorry. Just my rant.
No, and that's exactly, correct. I mean, kudos to those who work hard. Like I said, how many businesses out there can't find help? Hey, guys, get off your keisters and go out and work. Get two jobs. Get three if that's what it takes. And again, this is an obligation you chose to do. To better yourself. How does that better yourself by letting it go, by wiping it, hoping that government wipes it away for you? It just annoys me. Plus, why should the taxpayers of this country be penalized for someone's poor decision? if they can't. Now, granted, there's other problems. Yeah, what these tuitions, these colleges, these kids getting, you know, 100 grand, 300, you know, 200 grand of, hey, you know, how did you get that much? So let's take a look at, you know, who approves these loans and these grants and so forth. And maybe it should be a little more difficult to get into these types of colleges. And maybe you need to go more to a community college or, you know, even a trade school instead of trying, you know, Dave. So there's a lot of options. They have more options today than we ever had on getting to college.
Yeah, now there are signs, apparently, that the White House is considering yet another extension. I think this would be the third. I mean, Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, told the Senate Appropriations Committee last week that he was involved in conversations over whether October was indeed the best time to resume payments. In May, at an education conference, he said extending the payment pause was actually on the table. So that'll be interesting. At the same time, we're reading a recent change in student loan servicing could end up working in borrowers' favor as well. So the more things change, Melody.
Yeah, I know. So, hey, let's just make everything free. Everything's free.
Woo-hoo!
Get rid of those checkbooks and credit cards because you don't have to. You don't have to pay those credit cards. Just go default on them. Like government's going to default on our debt. Now, Dave, this Levity Golden, you know, I didn't know if I should get my little violin out and play it.
You know, it's interesting, and it does depend on how you view this. That was my initial notion, and then I thought, well, how's this valuable for the listeners? Because we certainly don't want to present what I'm about to as, you know, we're the card-carrying violin players for the country, for the world. Because that's not the intention here. I think just, well, beyond the mere curiosity that there's something called the Negative Experience Index that's run by Gallup. That's the fact that there are places across the world where a lot more people are feeling sad, angry, worried, or stressed. You know, it's sort of like, well, join that party, ladies and gentlemen. But Gallup, which tracks these experiences in more than 100 countries and regions, shows that collectively the world was feeling the worst it had last year in 15 years. the index score reached a new high of 32. 4 in 10 adults said they had experienced worry or stress, while less than 3 in 10 had experienced physical pain. Geez, 29%. Be curious to see how much of that, you know, is due to war or violence or due to chronic pain, like arthritis and what have you. About 1 in 4 more experienced sadness or anger. Now, already at or near record highs before the pandemic, these experiences, not surprisingly, continued to gain steam and set new records last year. Pandemic will do that for you, particularly the worry. And for those who happen to get sick, well, God bless them if they made it through. But the percentage of adults worldwide who experienced pain was the only index item that declined. And that dropped 2 points, as I mentioned, after holding steady for a number of years at 31%. But 2020 officially became the most stressful year in, well, recent history. Again, thank you, COVID. Though, as I mentioned, not everyone was feeling this stress to the same degree. Stress ranged from a high of 66% in Peru, which represents a new high for the country. Gosh, in Peru, to a low of 13% in Kyrgyzstan, where stress levels have been historically low. I'm trying to figure out that 66% in Peru, do they have such a low standard of living there? Boy, you'd hope with the Andes Mountains and Paca, what's the name of the world site, Pacumichu? You'd think it'd be a little better there. But Iraq continues to lead the world in negative experiences, which also
thank you, America.
Oh God! But listen to this. This is fascinating. To a low of 13 in Taiwan, which also scored the lowest in 2019. Now I wonder how much Taiwan's going to go up. Well, I mean, I'm thinking coming up in the coming year with all the talk of a China invasion, for example. but again, Iraqis led the world in experiencing pain, 56%, anger, 51%, and sadness, 50%. Lebanon, the country of Lebanon, was apparently a close. Now in the U.S. in 2021, people's ratings of their lives have rebounded, hitting a new all-time high, and our emotions, anyway, collectively, have returned to their pre-pandemic levels. Surprised at that, but all the findings reinforce why it's important for leaders to ask, benchmark, and understand how people are living their lives. Now, you can read more about this report at Gallup.com. Melody, an interesting segment of this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, it certainly was a different one, Dave.
Todd, you know. Todd, cue that violin.
You know, I mean, it's really when you look at the various countries and so forth, you can kind of figure it out and see why they would do that and everything like that. But to me, what it really says is, you know, it's... I don't know. I just think it's weird that it even matters what people are feeling. It's because it's not about feelings anymore. I mean, it shouldn't be about feelings. Well, if the government, particularly ours,
and being and making good in the world. I mean, geez,
no, it shouldn't be about feelings. That's not government's. That wasn't government's job to worry about our feelings. So anyway, PG&E, that's California's largest utility. They're always in a lot of news, and, they may have been involved. The equipment may have been involved in the start of the Big Dixie fire burning in Sierra Nevada. PG&E said in a report on Sunday to the California's Public Utilities Commission that a repairman responding to a circuit outage on July 13th spotted blown fuses in a conductor atop a pole, a tree leaning in the conductor, and a fire at the base of the tree. Weren't they supposedly involved in last year's or the year before that in one of their fires?
They had to pay a huge fine. I think $500 million or something like that. I mean, it's really big. I might have exaggerated that, but it was a huge number.
Well, not only the money, but the loss of life that they're responsible for. So why isn't somebody going to jail? I mean, if you have an arson who starts a fire and it kills somebody, I think they go to prison.
Well, it's usually determined to be manslaughter. I mean, it may have been unintentional. Certainly negligent.
So why isn't PG&E, any of their people that are in charge of this, not charged with negligence in the killing of so many people? My question. But anyway.
Money talks.
You know, so again, you know, they might have a very tough year with these fires in California, and they should be held accountable. For the hundreds of people that they've killed, basically, if they are at fault. Unemployment benefits, we talked about the college kids not wanting to pay their loans. They're not ready. Oh, poor is me. But there's literally millions of Americans that are scheduled to lose their unemployment benefits or see a lower weekly payment due to a collision of state rules and the expiration of the federal programs. Workers are reaching the end of their benefit year, which marks a year since they applied for assistance. Seeking aid past this point typically triggers a review from state labor agencies. They assess a worker's recent earnings records to judge whether the person qualifies for a new installment of benefits. Recipients who haven't found a job or have worked a few hours since the start of last year, and they might be a little out of luck. Little earnings will likely mean a much lower, if any, benefit. Well, this is one way to get people back to work, isn't it? Anyway, roughly 4.7 million people, a third of all recipients, were collecting benefits through the program as of June 26th. Bureau of Labor Statistics data suggests that 2.9 million Americans have been out of work for more than a year, though not all necessarily collect jobless benefits. There's almost 6 million people who are self-employed, gig, freelance, and other workers that are ineligible for these benefits, Dave.
Yeah, now these emergency unemployment compensation benefits have been available since the beginning of the pandemic. It was the benefits created by the CARES Act last March, which offers aid to those who exhaust their state benefits, usually 26 weeks, sometimes a little less, sometimes much less. I think as little as 12 weeks in a couple southern states. Congress has twice extended the program. Most recently, the American Rescue Plan extended it to just after Labor Day, September 6th. 22 states have opted to end federal unemployment assistance, including aid for the long-term unemployed, in June or July. Another four have opted for an early end to the $300 weekly supplement to benefits last year. States using different formulas, Melody, to determine how workers can requalify for assistance once their benefit year has elapsed. It's probably a Freudian slip. All of them, however, require at least some recent work history to be eligible, and that it appears will complicate the situation. If there's any consolation, there are sure a lot of job vacancy announcements out there.
Absolutely. And we're heading into a break. I'm sure everyone knows. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Wow, that seemed like a quick break. Welcome back one more time to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of client orders this last segment. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. Just touch on a couple of things here at the top of this final segment. Lawmakers in Washington struggling to finalize this $1.1 trillion infrastructure package, more narrowly focused on roads, bridges, and waterways, are reportedly no longer looking at strengthening enforcement at the IRS as a way to pay for the bill. Senator Rob Portman said the other day that the provision faced pushback from fellow Republicans and conservative anti-tax groups who lobbied for its removal in a letter to top GOP lawmakers earlier in the month. Another reason, Portman said, is that we found out that the Democrats were going to put a proposal into the reconciliation package, which was not just similar to the one we had, but with a lot more IRS enforcement. Portman of Ohio is a member of the bipartisan group of 22, 11 R's, 11 D's, that's been drafting the bill. He's retiring in December when his current term expires. Now, the bipartisan group negotiating the proposal had been hoping that as much as $100 billion would be collected over the next 10 years by beefing up the IRS's enforcement staff, that to close the so-called tax gap and make sure people pay taxes that they owe. In a recent official analysis, the IRS said it missed out on an average of $441 billion per year from 2011 through 2013 due to taxpayers not complying with the law. And more recently, IRS Commissioner Charles Reddick said that the tax gap could be as much as $1 trillion a year annually. Big numbers. Now, another space, the final frontier. We shall see. The richest person on Earth has now traveled beyond it. Bezos, Jeff Bezos, billionaire founder of Amazon and the space flight company Blue Origin, launched into suborbital space with three other people today aboard the first crewed mission of the company's New Shepard vehicle. The capsule carried Bezos, his brother Mark, 82-year-old female aviation pioneer Wally Funk, and 18-year-old Dutch physics student Oliver Diamond, 66.5 miles above Earth, and came down for a successful parachute-aided dust-raising landing in the West Texas scrublands. The rocket itself that boosted them up there also returned safely, making what I think is still a fascinating vertical power touchdown at its designated landing zone. And perhaps even more interesting was that deafening sonic boom, along with raucous cheers from Blue Origin workers who happened to watch the flight. And all of that action from liftoff to landings took just over 10 minutes. Let's see, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. In addition to a detailed article by Doug Noland of Credit Bubble Bulletin, I have a feature on rising geopolitical volatility. Hotspots have swelled across the country so far this year, adding several formidable international crises to President Biden's daunting domestic wish list. So much so, you have to wonder if the widening cracks in the global wall are going to need all the king's horses and all the king's men and women. Will these proliferation of threats to American leadership and to economies as well around the world cause Humpty Dumpty to fall? The U.S. is facing new versions of several familiar crises. Russia amassed more troops from Ukraine borders this spring. The skies over Gaza were lit in May with fire from Israel and Hamas. Neither crisis has ended. Rising tensions between India and Pakistan over Kashmir are decades in the making, and there's new cause for concern in the Himalayas after border clashes between India and China. All three, including the Pakistanis, have nuclear weapons. The power struggle in Venezuela continues. Yemen's humanitarian crisis has deepened. And Syria and Libya remain full of unrest and are breeding grounds for foreign meddling. Many say that Biden can expect escalation from the newest nuclear power, North Korea, at some point in his tenure. And Taiwan, once again, the flashpoint of all flashpoints. A Chinese invasion of the self-governing island seems increasingly likely to some observers that could lead to a war, perhaps the likes of which the world hasn't seen in many decades. And even short of that, you know, many, like Dave Lawler of Axios, speculates that flare-ups there will continue over the South China Sea. Now, the world has also experienced a wave of protest and political instability from the coup in Myanmar to the recent assassination of Haiti's president. And Peru's presidential transition has been held hostage by electoral fraud claims. Colombia's security forces have cracked down on mass protests there, and Cubans just south of us have come out in the streets again, this time on an unprecedented scale. Violence and instability all over Central America continue to push migrants northward to our southern border, and Lebanon's political deadlock is fueling its economic collapse, with the West unsure whether to aid the country's leaders or sanction them. Jump to Africa, and Ethiopia is in the midst of a civil war. And even in comparatively stable South Africa, destructive riots there have swept through cities in recent days. And yes, Afghanistan remains one of the world's most unstable countries as American troops leave Afghan forces in charge of keeping the Taliban in check. And Biden, frankly, has to make a decision soon about U.S. troops still in Iraq, which are now engaged in a proxy war with Iran-backed militias whose country is ramping up nuclear production. And speaking of Iran, the White House wants to return to the 2015 nuclear deal with the rogue nation. Or is it just misunderstood? Well, in the 6 weeks remaining until the inauguration of a new Iranian president, one administration official said, if we don't have a deal before a new government is formed, I think that would raise serious questions about how achievable it's going to be. Conservative Judiciary Chief Ibrahim Raisi, a close ally to Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, is the clear favorite to win Friday's latest version of a sham presidential election in Iran. No well-known members of the Reformist Party were allowed to run, and meaning the more moderate Hassan Rouhani, president, will almost certainly hand power to a hardliner. Now, some diplomats involved in the negotiations have long said it would be much easier to reach a deal with the outgoing administration than with a new government, particularly one led by Raisi. Six rounds of talks have been held so far in Vienna, with the U.S. not in the room for any of them, but negotiating indirectly through EU intermediaries. And consensus does appear to be that more time will be needed to hammer out a pact. Iran's top negotiator reportedly believes that a deal won't be possible in the current round of talks, though he says Iran has no interest in wasting time and the elections will not be a factor. Trust but verify, ladies and gentlemen. Now, whom will Raisi take his marching orders from? Khamenei or Rouhani? Russia's envoy said last week that a deal was perhaps a couple of weeks away. Germany's foreign minister also stressed that playing for time is in no one's interest. But Rafael Grossi, who heads the UN's nuclear watchdog, said everyone knows at this point that it will be necessary to wait for the new Iranian government. The U.S. official said, we don't have infinite time to get this done. The U.S. does not intend to continue negotiations for months and months. We'll negotiate the same way we've been negotiating so far. What happens after the inauguration, that's a different matter. But hopefully we'll get a deal done then. If not, we'll have to reconsider. Now, the official did say what the biggest remaining obstacles to a deal are, but said progress was being made both in determining the sanctions relief the U.S. has to provide, as well as the nuclear steps Iran must take. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, there is an awful lot of geopolitical volatility whirling around out there, and a lot of uncertainty to go with it. It's just another reason why investing more in gold and silver in the coming months is prudent. Call us 1-800-375-4188. Now, as a quick epilogue to Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, which talked about how U.S. oil companies have been dragging their feet on ramping up production this year and how, in turn, that's been driving up prices at the gas pump. Over the weekend, we learned that OPEC Plus forged a deal to increase monthly oil supplies by 400,000 barrels a day, thus ending that contentious impasse largely between the Saudis and the Emirates. Analysts are initially reacting to that agreement by claiming it will reduce the risk of an inflationary oil spike, especially in the near term when price weakness will presumably come as investors start to unwind their bullish positions. West Texas Intermediate for August delivery tanked over 7% yesterday, falling by over 5.25 a barrel, closing below $70 for the first time since early June. And as Melody mentioned in her Mark report at the top of today's program, WT dropped immediately at today's opening to 65.21 before rebounding somewhat and closing the day at $67 and change. It's the beginning of 2021. WTI is up a whopping 58%, having risen from a closing low of 47.62 on January 4th. To a closing high of 75.25 last Tuesday. In other words, the risk of an inflationary oil spike that analysts have been fearing is, well, quite the understatement. In other words, if a 58% rise in prices isn't inflationary, I mean, what in the world is? Inflation's been here all along. Protect yourself from rising prices. Invest more in gold and silver. Now, to end today's program, Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade ask, will he or won't he? And say that's become the favorite chatter among the Wall Street elites, progressives, and business press. Of course, they're talking about whether President Biden will or will not give Fed Chair Jerome Powell a second term at the helm of the Fed. Powell's current four-year term as chair ends early February 2022. That's next year. That's coming quickly. Debate heated up last week. On Wednesday, Robert Kuttner, who co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect, and also a professor at Brandeis University's Heller School, wrote this about Powell. I'm quoting now. As a Republican, he partly bulletproofs Biden against the charge being soft on inflation and serves as an administration olive branch to Republicans in Congress. But Powell has been dismal on the Fed's other job, financial regulation. The next day, during a Senate Banking Committee hearing with Powell, Senator Elizabeth Warren criticized Powell for loosening regulations on the serially charged mega banks on Wall Street. Warren said that Powell has weakened the rules on how the bank would be unwound if it became insolvent, and also weakened the Volcker rule by allowing banks to take on more trading risks and expand their investments into private equity and hedge funds. Warren told Powell that she was highlighting just two specific areas, but there were plenty more examples of how Powell had weakened rules on the big banks during his chairmanship. For example, reducing capital requirements, easing liquidity requirements, shrinking margin requirements, scaling back on supervision, and weakening the annual stress tests. Warren's complaints were similar to complaints made in November by the Americans for Financial Reform Education Fund. Its criticism of the Fed under Powell included the following. Excuse me. During the second quarter of 2020, major banks were permitted to remove almost $2 trillion from their balance sheets for the purposes of calculating compliance with key leverage capital thresholds. Banks also benefited from $20 billion in direct capital relief due to a two-year moratorium on counting new loan loss reserves against their retained earnings for capital purposes. Some Wall Streeters believe the task of replacing Powell poses big risks with little upside. They say that Biden should put the loose talk to rest and make it clear that Powell is his man. Unless, of course, Biden wants someone like Lyle Brainard to be its woman. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Thanks again to our producer, Todd. Special shout out to my daughter, Hannah, on her big birthday. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye. If I ain't not be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.